thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Confession.
Here's John Williams.
I got a confession. First, we're in the Allstate Showcase Studio. It's actually a Skyline Studio. We're way up 18 stories above downtown Chicago and the beautiful Chicago River. This is John Williams. You can hear us weekdays 1 to 3 and Saturdays 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Don't forget on social media, I'm WGN King John. WGN King John on social media. That means on Facebook. You'll be able to find our daily web poll question. It's called The News Click, sponsored by... Nine people in the sales department just went, shh. Nobody yet. Anyway, The News Click is a daily web poll question that we post on our Facebook page and also at WGNradio.com. Yesterday's News Click was a new theme pop-up bar designed around TV's The Office is opening in Lincoln Square. Okay, that wasn't the newsiest of our clicks, but there it was. 57% of you said, hey, that sounds like fun. I'm in. 43% said you'll take a pass.
I thought everybody loved The Office.
I think it's partly a problem with pop-up bars.
People are just not into them?
I've been to one. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, Kim. Welcome back. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
And to see you in the halls. And I just think if you're going to do it, you really have to
do
go
it right.
All in.
Well, the first one I remember was Saved by the Bell. And
that one was a huge, huge... They expanded.
Good.
I mean, they, you know, continued it because it was so successful.
Right, but that's like because it's cute. Like, you want to go in that diner and hang out and it's something crazy. I mean, the set of The Office, like,
I don't know.
We all sit in an office, right?
I know. We don't have to go drink there later.
Maybe pop-ups are just getting overdone.
Maybe that's it. Somebody suggested, though, yesterday via text, 312-981-7200, that they like the idea of a MASH pop-up bar, MASH the TV show with Alan Alda from the 70s and 80s. And I thought, actually, that does sound like fun because they had their famous still. They made their own gin. You could do a tent, have a Jeep out front, make it look like a MASH
unit.
That
would be cool.
I think you get some blonde-haired lady to dress up like Hot Lips. You know, you need a radar. You need a Hawkeye.
You need a clinger.
Yeah,
you definitely need a clinger.
In my neighborhood, that would not be difficult to find. But yeah, so cast it out, mingle them about, and do it well. The one I was at wasn't done great. Maybe that's part of the problem here. We do have a new news click, though, today. It's a little news here. Elif, what is the new news click, please?
Community activists want to shut down northbound Lakeshore Drive before the Cubs game August 2nd, Lollapalooza in Grant Park will be underway. A. Good idea. B. It was a bad idea last time, and it's a bad idea this time.
All right, those are your two options for the news click at WGNradio.com. Scroll down. If you don't see it right on the front, it's usually down there a little bit. It's also on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. We'll visit with Phil Vitella in this hour, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. Steve Cochran's going to join us. Sean Spicer was on his show. Spicy's got a new book out. I'm anxious to get it and read it, and then I was going to interview him. Then, of course, Cochran gets him right out of the gate. So now I don't know what I'm going to do. But I do know I'm going to talk to Cochran about that interview and play back part of it in the 2 o'clock hour. Sean Spicer with Steve Cochran will play a couple minutes of it in the 2 o'clock hour and then talk about how that went.
He's getting beaten up, kind of. I didn't hear Steve's conversation with him. They've canceled a signing in, I think, for this weekend at a big box store. Yeah, he had a very rough interview with the BBC. I don't know if that was today or yesterday.
I saw that trending, yeah.
Right. It's kind of funny. This is the first casualty, and he's still bearing the brunt of it all.
Have you heard Steve Cochran talk about Donald Trump? Sean Spicer was his first spokesperson. Steve could not have been nicer to him. It was a much kinder, more civil interview than I thought it would be. I was almost disappointed. We'll talk about the obligation on the host and the guest in the 2 o'clock hour with Steve. Can I just tell you that I'm a sucker for a couple of things? And I know what you're thinking, John, just a couple? But here's two things that I'm a sucker for. When I go into Binney's Beverage Depot and there's somebody there sampling, I'll say, sure, I'll try. And then out of sympathy for the person standing there, I'll often buy stuff that I really don't want.
Oh, man.
I came home with a bottle of Applejack once. I don't know what that is. I don't know that we've opened it.
I have no problem saying no.
Yeah, if you don't like it, you don't like it.
These are people who are just standing there, selling, promoting. They're looking you in the eye. And suddenly, that bottle of Argentinian wine for $24 that I really didn't enjoy becomes an extension of them. And I don't want to reject them. They're nice people. I'm telling you, this is how I operate. And I think, it wasn't that bad. And God bless him. He's a nice guy. There was a guy the other day at Benny's, and he was dancing as fast as he could. Not obnoxiously. He just knew his stuff, and he was so selling it. And I thought, oh, God bless you. Oh, I'll take a bottle. So I have some sparkling rosé in the fridge.
I'll take that if you don't want it.
Yeah, sparkling rosé.
Now, it's different if you're going to take like 10 samples and then not buy it. Like, I might have done that once or twice when I was hungry at the deli counter. And you know at Mariano's, they offer you those little sausages that they grilled up.
Yeah.
So I'll take like two because they put pretzels with them.
I know. Actually, I pretty much avoid the people handing out stuff at the grocery store for the same reason. I'm going to come home with some zucchini, and I don't even like zucchini. I know I will end up doing that. And at the liquor store, I'm like, well, I would like to sample it. I really would like to sample it. Maybe I will find something I'd love. But sometimes I don't think I've ever had something I went, wow, $20 just jumped out of my pocket. No, I just often will accommodate the person because I want to reward them for their effort.
Well, but it's something you wouldn't have tried. Like, you would have never got Applejack, the whole bottle,
right,
to try it.
Yeah.
So now you know, though, not to buy Applejack.
I hate to tell them that. When I go to arts and crafts shows, I'll sometimes make purchases for things that I kind of like, but that's why I'm buying it. Not because I really want it. Lord, I don't need it. But this lady made this thing, handcrafted all by herself, and nobody's buying her stuff. Oh, I'll go ahead and get it. So now I have a clay vase to put things in or something.
So what's the second thing you're a sucker for?
When I'm on the internet, I will see, you will not believe what happened after this photo was taken.
No.
And so then I click through because I always want to see what happened. Usually the picture that promotes that click through menu
isn't even in the article.
So I'm looking at one about Julia Roberts, and it says, you can't believe how much Julia Roberts'
daughter looks like her. I clicked on that today.
I love me some Julia Roberts. I can just imagine someday in my little fantasy world, we're sitting in Aaron Brockovich's office eating a mystic pizza. She's got the hooker boots on from Pretty Woman, and we're just chatting away. I really like Julia Roberts, and I thought, man, I'll bet her daughter is attractive or looks like her, whatever. And since I hadn't talked to Julia in a while, I thought, oh, I'll go ahead and click through and see. And then the first thing you notice is, how many is it? Is it like 57? I'm out. 30. I thought, okay, 30 clicks. I know it's not going to be it's never the first one. And it wasn't the second one. And it wasn't the third one. And then some of the people I'm looking at, I don't even know, but I'm just clicking through because I'm going to see what Julia Roberts' daughter looks like. There was no Julia Roberts' daughter picture. When I get to be king, that will be illegal. We will find you and put you in jail. How can you put a picture of Julia Roberts there? Why do you put a picture of Julia Roberts there and say, boy, her daughter sure looks like her?
Well, I think you just spent 2 minutes explaining why.
You've never done this, huh?
I don't do it usually.
Well, but also those things can be dangerous sometimes because that's how people get viruses or...
Well, I always use the company computers when I do this.
Okay, good.
Usually, too, the picture that entices you is a picture of a woman with large breasts. Have you noticed that? No, I'm not kidding.
No, not particularly.
Oh, sure. A lot of times the click-through picture, the clickbait, if you will, and I don't know how they expect to get women to click through, but I know at least half the population might go, huh. So they click through. And a lot of times it won't be, forget Julia Roberts, you won't believe what her daughter looks like. It might be like 10 hacks for pet owners. We have a couple of crazy dogs. I'm like, hey, maybe there's something that will help us with our nutty dogs. So I'll click through. But a lot of times the picture 10 hacks for dog owners will involve a woman with large breasts. She's standing there holding a puppy or something like that. And usually the top button looks like it's about to burst. And I think, okay, I don't know what that has to do with pets, but maybe a lady with large breasts has a puppy and she's got some good information for us. So you click through. She's never in the menu of photos. So I've sworn off that. I'm not going to do that anymore. I don't do that. But there I was, clicking through, just like Violetta, who seems to be smarter than the room. And Violetta clicked through on the Julia Roberts one to see what her daughter looked like.
I didn't actually click it, but I was considering it. But I
well, don't. It's a waste of time.
Well, I just clicked it now, actually. But then I just Googled Julia Roberts' daughter. She does look like her. But her hair is like platinum blonde because she doesn't dye it, obviously. She only looks like about 12. She's still young.
Well, I guess I could Google her, but that sort of takes the fun out of the way. They put it right there in front of me. There was a picture of Julia Roberts, and I thought, okay, great.
Holding a baby, which isn't even her daughter.
Jay, sitting next to me, our intern, said, you're falling for the clickbait, John.
I know I am. I'm usually better than that. But again, Julia Roberts and I have a special relationship. So I thought, okay, fine. I want to see what Julia's up to. So I clicked through. And I'm always careful not to hit one of the 57 faux arrows. You know, if you hit the wrong button or arrow, it'll take you to an ad for something that you don't want, or to another site, or to Russia. I didn't do any of that.
I mean, who cares if you fall for the clickbait? But the worst part about it is that you don't get the answer you were looking for.
Yeah, well,
that's the frustrating part. I don't care that I clicked the clickbait. Yeah. I care that the clickbait isn't telling me what I want, which is to know what Julia Roberts' daughter looks like.
There'll be some fantastic photo, and they'll say, you can't believe what happened after this picture was taken. And it's a guy teetering on a cliff, or, you know, a dog juggling balls or something like that. And I go, wow, what happens? And they don't show you. I promise you, when I get to be king, this will not be permitted. A text has just poured in. John, you have way too much class to have Sean Spicer on your show. if that's a compliment, I'll take it, but I don't think it's true.
Yeah.
You know, think that
of that. My producer's voice, by the way.
I want to hear from Sean Spicer on our show. Come on.
Remember we did, talked about after he left that, oh, he was interviewing with the networks.
I said he was going to be a commentator on Fox.
Oh, a lot of people. We all did.
Yeah.
And that hasn't disappeared.
Yeah. Maybe of his own volition, too.
He interviewed with them.
John, if suckers like you keep doing that, those clickbait boxes are going to keep popping up. If no one did it, they would not exist. John, could you come to our garage sale?
I know, you leave with a hosh-posh of things.
Look, honey, a sombrero. We don't have room in my condo for a sombrero.
But imagine this, Taco Tuesday.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders has outperformed Sean Spicer by leaps and bounds. That's an interesting question. Who's doing a better job?
Well, I heard some analysis yesterday, and they said that Spicer always looked uncomfortable lying.
Yeah. And she just barrels ahead.
She does not.
Which I think means she's actually doing a better job.
For the president, perhaps, yes.
Which is the job.
Well,
we'll talk to Cochran about this after, too. Phil Vitale is the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. He's in our studio. Thank you for that news, Steve Bertrand. Hi, Phil. How are you? Nice to see you.
I'm good, John. Thanks for having me.
And by the way, it's nice to see you. Phil came out last Wednesday for years in this town, the restaurant critic for the major newspaper, and no one ever knew what he looked like. They never posted his picture. Even when he'd appear in videos, you wouldn't see his face. And then there it was, page one of the food section. Great big picture of you.
Yeah, I was holding out for the centerfold, but they ultimately decided no.
And the ladies of Chicago swooned.
Is that what they call it?
You could have done that Burt Reynolds pose.
Right.
Was that in Playgirl
or
Cosmo?
Yeah, I believe so.
It was,
good question. I don't know.
It's where he's posed nude.
Cosmo, I think.
I believe he has a little fruit right in the right place.
I think it was a bread bag or something like that.
let's not talk about that.
That's right.
Hey, I want to ask you about this new restaurant you reviewed. But before we do that, Passerota, which you call fun Korean fare. Great first sentence. Cute as a button and loaded with charm. Passerota is the sort of restaurant that makes you feel like a knowledgeable foodie just because you know enough to recommend it. Passerota, cute as a button, loaded with charm. So I went to a restaurant that Elif reached out to you about. You said you hadn't seen it yet, but I just wanted to ask you about something that happened there.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Beatnik,
okay,
which I think is on Morgan, and it's in the, what is that, South Loop, West Loop? Where is that? Violetta, yep. You're about to say something?
I thought it was at Ashland in Chicago.
Ashland, yes, it's on Chicago. Yeah.
Okay, West Town probably the the safest description of the neighborhood.
Really fun place.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting menu. I'd love to see a review of it.
Yeah. Well, they just opened a second one, so I'm looking forward to
it. Yeah, and I think this was the original that we were at. So, mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a lot of plants, a lot of pottery, a lot of interesting light fixtures, high ceiling music. It's just got a real energetic vibe. Maybe a little too much volume for me, but not too bad. Really interesting furniture. We just had a nice time. Anyway, the four of us order food, and when the food is ready, it's delivered. If the four of you order and the four items aren't ready at the same time, then you all eat your food when it comes out. You know what I mean? They don't serve it at the same time.
Right. Yes.
It's not going to sit there and let it sit there and wait for the other dishes because now it's getting less awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thought about that?
Well, it's very convenient for the kitchen. I'll say that. When the food's ready, it goes right out, and depending on how the line is set up, that's a good way to do it, as you may not have as many runners on staff who can sit there and make sure all four are brought out there. It's not traditional service that we're used to or possibly enjoy. It works best, I think, when you're dining communally and plates are just going to hit the middle of the table and everyone's going to just descend on it like feral pigs or whatever. But it's not my favorite thing. If I order three courses, I kind of like them to be, okay, here come the appetizers for everybody. Here come the main courses for everybody. I don't want to say, well, the first appetizer comes, then the second one, and then now we're going to throw you an entree because that came up really quick.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah, I can tell.
Well, I think it is maybe good for them, but I mean,
right.
who eats that way? You don't eat that way at home. You don't eat that way in other restaurants. And they said, just so you know, and I, you know, full disclosure here, they warned us about this. When we order, this was at the brunch, the guy says, just so you know, we'll bring it out when it's ready, so we recommend sharing.
Right.
Okay, so that's a way to do it, but that's not really like small plates or a real large dish where it's oversized and enough for four. I ordered, the fried chicken sandwich or something, and so here comes my dish, and it was a dish for one, and it's, now I got to get the knife out and saw it into four pieces, and then everybody's going to, you know, slide it over to their little plates.
And you don't get what you wanted.
I wanted all of the chicken sandwich. And besides, it wasn't, I don't think the food that they brought was designed to be shared to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my complaint.
I'm in sympathy there, because sometimes people don't feel like sharing.
The food,
the food that we
did share was really good.
Well, that's good.
I thought it was really good. I thought the cocktail scene was really good. That's
Didn't you say the fried rice? I've been dreaming of it.
They brought out a fried rice that made me weep.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want it.
Me too.
Duck egg on top.
Okay.
Oh, man. You went to this Korean restaurant in Andersonville, right?
Right.
Tell me about it.
Well, it's kind of like one woman's vision, Jennifer Kim, who worked at a restaurant called Snaggletooth a couple of years ago, and she's opened her own place. The name is Passerotto, which in Italian means little sparrow, which was her nickname as a child, because apparently the way her feet were or something like that, their dad called her little sparrow, but he called her that in Korean because that's her heritage. So rather than put the Korean name for little sparrow on the wall, she translated it once more into Italian and put that on the wall because the restaurant includes a fair amount of Italian influences in addition to Korean home-style food, I guess you'd call it.
We just don't have that many Italian-Korean restaurants in this city. Now
no,
we do.
Not a lot. Now we've got this.
What do you make of the fusion? Does it work?
Yeah, there aren't many dishes you could really call fusion. She does a couple of really clever pastas. There's a dish that comes out. It looks just like gnocchi with braised lamb on top of it. But the gnocchi aren't gnocchi. They're made out of rice, like almost like a rice cake. And so when you bite into it, you get a completely different texture than your eyes had been telling you to expect. And it's kind of neat, but she.
But I would recognize this place as Korean fare.
Oh, absolutely.
And so give me some of the dishes. Spicy ribs, raw fish, what have you got
right,
there?
Right. There's a bulgogi on the among the main courses, your Korean-style beef. There's a mixed seafood plate. There's lots of different. She does a lot of raw fish, and that really comes from her family. Now, when they get together, they like to go out for sushi and sashimi. So she does some of that. So she some of it's Korean, but she also incorporates the ingredients and seasonings that are common to so many Asian restaurants.
Paso Rodo, you say it's got an interesting bar scene. I always glance over to see what you say about that.
Yeah, they're clever cocktails.
The beverage program isn't clever, sir. It's a revelation. Along with the five draft and two bottles of beer, bottled beers, there are interesting cocktails, including a very good rhubarb margarita that went away when the rhubarb did, and about a dozen food-friendly wines. Not a lot of Korean restaurants bother with wine, you wrote.
No. They don't. Usually, many are, well, some are BYOB, and then some, they've got beer.
Rhubarb margarita.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get my head around that.
Yeah, well, it's got a little sweet, but like rhubarb, it's got a little bitter undercurrent. It's more of a grown-up cocktail, but as you know, the rhubarb season has sadly gone away. It doesn't grow very long, very often, and very long.
Oh, I see. So I can't get a rhubarb margarita now.
Nope, I would not trust a rhubarb margarita at this point. Somebody's got a jar of preserved margarita that they're using now.
Pickled margarita. Mm-hmm. 42 seats in this room.
That's it. Yeah. Tiny space.
Reservations are recommended?
I would, yeah. I would definitely get in there with a res. I mean, midweek, you could probably just stroll on in, but I always like to let people know that there's a table coming.
You wrote about the restaurant this. Dry-aged lamb tartare is an unami bomb. The chopped lamb is hidden under a blanket of grated Parmesan, which also conceals jammy bits of soy-cured egg yolk. That actually sounds kind of good.
It is, yeah. The egg comes off almost like almost like sticky candy in a little bit and texturally, and it's good. It's good quality lamb, and they're these cool little crackers that you try to use to eat the lamb, but it doesn't quite work. But they taste good on their own.
So, what do you give it? 4 stars.
I'm giving them 2 stars.
2 stars, which is good by your
which
standard.
Is good, and partly, frankly, for the size of the operation and the newness of the operation, I'm not sure they're ready for the onslaught of a 3-star recommendation.
Your service wasn't great?
Service was fine, but they weren't ever jammed full. And I want to see how they are how they do. excuse me, when it's really packed.
A couple of texts, John. I absolutely hate it when the restaurants want me to share. And this from 630. Not that just the fact that you have to share. But what if you can't eat something that someone else orders, or you don't like it, or you're allergic to it? Then you're stuck giving your food up and having there sitting there looking at you. You can mention my name, signed Sandy. Well, thank you, Sandy. Yeah.
That's a very good point, Sandy.
I didn't think about that because all of us ordered something that actually, now that you mention it, 4 of us ordered things. We all shared, but one of the dishes wasn't my liking. I mean, I should have tried it. But I didn't because I just wouldn't be what I would have ordered. And so I let it go. So there's a little. So then I say, well, I didn't have a fourth of that thing. So then now you're doing the math in your head. Do I get an extra piece of the chicken because you had the one? And so you kind of go around like that.
One way to maybe impose your own control over that experience
yes.
is to order sparingly. I know the places, well, we really like it if you order everything at once, and then we can course it out. Like, otherwise, you'd have no idea when you were hungry next and when you'd want. So sometimes you might want to say, you know, not going to be doing it that way. Get us these 3 appetizers while we look at the menu and think of other things. And then just order them as you want to see them, and then you won't have so much. Oh, well, the vegetable dish got ready first, so here you go. Boom, on the table, you know.
What were you thinking, Elif? You were going to say something?
I was just going to say, I agree with that person who texted in. I don't like to share my food, really.
Who are you people? I hate when people don't share with me.
Unless it's tapas and unless it's someone I care about, I don't mind giving them a few bites of my food.
I share all my food all the time.
What do they do at Bucharest? Do you guys wait until all the meals are ready and then send them all out at once?
Yes. My parents definitely course it out, I think, appropriately. You know, the entrees come out for the entrees. Or even if you order an appetizer as your entree, sometimes people, you know, want a salad as their entree. Or
I like it when they ask.
Right.
Because you'll sometimes order and say, do you want the salad with your dinner, or do you want it first?
Right.
If you're the only one that, say, ordered a salad. So I like to control that. But that was not an option here. It's like, guess what? You're going to get the food when we get done cooking it.
But our food dishes are also big, so they're good to share. So any entree, you know, comes with almost 5 or 4 pieces.
All right, all right.
That's one of the things.
No, I'm serious. It is. So
that's the part of these kind of restaurants that kind of tickles me. They say, well, the portions are small, so you can share them. No, portions are big, so I can share them.
Now that you mention
When I have $2, I don't share my dollar. When I have $18, I'm happy to share my dollars.
I might.
They're small and shareable. No, they're small or shareable.
312-981-7200. You can call or text if you have a question about the restaurant scene for Phil Vitale, the now exposed critic for the Chicago Tribune. 312-981-7200. This texter says, John, I stabbed a friend with a fork once because she thought she could grab my French fries.
I assume he means a former friend?
Steve, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Phil if he's tried the restaurant ABBA and if he has what he thought of it.
I've been there a couple times. I'm getting ready to review it. I'm pretty impressed so far, but I'll wait till I have an actual review to give you too many more details. But number one, it's very good. And number two, it is crazy popular right now. I mean, you need a crowbar to get in there.
ABBA. A-B-B-A, like the group?
No, one B is missing.
A-B-A.
ABBA, like Israeli word for father.
ABBA.
Which is from the same chef that brought us Ema in River North, which is the Israeli word for mother. So Steve, we've got a pattern.
Steve, have you been there?
I have. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So you went to ABBA, A-B-A. Did you make reservations? Just tell me a little bit about your experience.
I did make reservations. It was jam-packed, like Phil said. And you'd be curious to hear what Phil thinks about Ema, too, which I guess is
this. What was your review for the first one?
Ema, I reviewed, a couple of years ago. I can't remember the star rating now. It was three, two or three. I can't remember. But C.J. Jacobson is the chef, and he's doing kind of a Middle Eastern food with the sort of California sensibility. So at Ema, there's a really strong vegetable focus. And with ABBA, there are a lot of Ema menu items on the ABBA menu. So if you really liked ABBA, you're going to really love this place.
Love that.
And he's just really ratcheted up the protein content. So there's a lot more meats on there, and there's a steak and some other stuff.
Nice to know. Well, I guess the male version of a restaurant,
right,
you know, would be maybe a little heartier.
Well, this is more the Fulton Market version, where you've got all these people coming in, and you want to be sure you get everybody, I guess.
Before I let you go, so where is this located? ABBA?
It's
ABA?
At the corner of Fulton Market and Green, in that building on the northwest corner that Rich Millman has a Beatrix there, and he's got a private party room.
Oh, I know where you are.
Side.
I know exactly where you are.
Okay, so where Beatrix, you turn on Green and go just 10, 15 feet north, and it's right there. There's a little door for ABBA.
What do you give, Steve? What do you give it? 1 to 4 stars?
I give it about a 3, I would say, maybe 3.5.
Yeah, there you go.
I appreciate the review. Thanks for the phone call, John. Ever try Smakos? Spelling on Lawrence, Mill Central, cute little Polish place. Smakos. You been to that one?
I've never heard of it.
Write that one down. Hey, John, where's the best place to go for a chocolate experience? What is the best restaurant to take your dog to? The best restaurant to take your dog to is your house. That's where your dog lives,
mm-hmm.
And that's where your dog should eat dinner. John, the plate sharing thing is way overdone. Sometimes I just want to eat my own dinner, and sometimes people order things I don't like, and they eat a bunch of my stuff, and I can't reciprocate. If I suggest ordering another plate to make up for that, they act like I'm ordering too much food. John, this is a pain. You actually said something to me off the air about this phenomenon, which was that the chefs, if they're doing dumplings or scallops,
mm-hmm.
will often put an odd number on the plate.
Yeah, typically yes.
I didn't know that.
If you look at how many things are on a plate of whatever, it's probably going to be an odd number. I mean, 50-50 shot, this is not exactly, you know, a revelation. It's either going to be odd or even, right?
Yeah, I hate that. And then I hate when they don't suggest, like, a slight upcharge to add one.
Right. Well, I suggest that myself. I'm sitting there with 3 other people, and it's the sharing experience, and said, oh, we've got gyoza. Okay, fine. How many gyoza? 3. And I'm like, you see 4 of us here.
Right.
So are we going to, like, fight? Or are we going to figure out the logistics of cutting up? Everyone gets 3/4 of a gyoza.
Right. So
That's an element of design, isn't it? I mean, if you're landscaping, it's five or three or...
Right, the rule of threes and in visual design and all that. Rule of thirds, I'm sorry. So
it's not the rules of sharing.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
But so then would it? So then you say, hey, look, there's four of us. Are we going to fight over the math on cutting up the three of them? Or could you throw in another one? And then I guess you should expect them to charge you 30% more for an extra one?
Exactly. I say, can we get a third? Can we get one more? And, of course, they said, sure.
Funny thing is, though, say it's a dumpling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe if it's a scallop, that's a more expensive food item. But I'll bet they're out of pocket for one more dumpling on that plate is not a lot.
No.
They could drop another one on there.
Yep.
Right? I'm already paying $17.
Right.
I don't need to pay $23.
Mm-hmm.
For $17, that probably represents, I don't know. Do you have any idea? If I'm eating $17 worth of dumplings, what did that cost them?
Well, we're working on about a 30% food cost or something like that.
Is that what it is? Maybe a third of that. Maybe cost them $6.
Yeah, might have put $6 or so to put on a plate.
So I'll give you $6 for another dumpling.
Yeah.
And then you think, wait, I just paid $6 for a dumpling? And then you say, I'm going to go home and eat with the dog in that case.
Well, if it's three dumplings for $17, it's time to make some... some other choices,
right,
too.
I've overpriced the dumplings. It's clearly what I've done.
I'm not coming to this restaurant again. Try the dumplings. Yeah, for $17, I'll try the dumplings.
It's good to see you, Phil.
Thank you.
Phil Vitale writes about the restaurant scene in the Chicago Tribune. Visit chicagotribune.com/dining to get his most recent review about Little Sparrow, the Palisetro.
Mm-hmm. Passerotto.
Passerotto. You know, I'm watching the TV show Billions. We were talking about the TV show Billions the other day. It's about a guy who has billions. And so it's just very interesting because sometimes there's cameos, really famous people in there. But they showed something that maybe a billionaire would know. He's at a fancy restaurant, and the guy runs the restaurant, takes him back in the kitchen. And they eat kind of a little bird, like
ortolan.
It's infused with like a liquor, and it overate its whole life, and then they cook it a certain way, and then they put a napkin over their top of their head to sort of infuse all their sensory glands and nose and mouth and everything, and the odor and the aroma, and then they just eat this whole little bird in one schomp.
Right.
Yeah. Have you ever done that?
No. Yeah. Not allowed to do that over here.
That's what they said. It's illegal.
Yeah, because the bird is alive.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't want to
Introduce that ick factor, but yes.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Mm-mm. All right, let's get rolling. Tower number two, John Williams Show. Remember, you can hear us weekdays. I'm fighting the audio on this, and I couldn't understand why. It's because I'm turning down the wrong button. This would be a great place for a radio show. Hi, it's John. You can hear me weekdays, but barely sometimes until 3, and then on Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 12 noon. On social media, I'm WGN King John. Each day, we now post a news click. It's a daily web poll question. It asks you about something in the news. Producer Elif, what is the news click today, please?
Community activists want to shut down northbound Lakeshore Drive before the Cubs game August 2nd. Lollapalooza in Grant Park will be underway. A, good idea. B, it was a bad idea last time, and it's a bad idea this time.
Okay, so they're going to mess up not only Lollapalooza, but Lakeshore Drive, and they're going to go right to Addison and Clark during a Cubs game. So that's an idea to get people's attention. We'll see what you say. WGNradio.com, that's where you'll find the news click, or on my Facebook page, I'm WGN King John.
Can I talk to you a little bit more about this Russia story?
So the second summit with Vladimir Putin has been postponed.
Well, John Bolton put out a statement saying that President Trump, let me just read it for you. The president believes the next bilateral meeting with President Putin should take place after the Russia witch hunt is over, referring to the Mueller investigation.
Yeah.
And so they're talking about next year now. The thing about it is the Russians had never accepted the invitation. And it's not clear that they were going to. In fact, just even yesterday, one of the foreign ministers said, or one of the people in the foreign ministry said that it might be good enough for them to meet on the sideline of another summit. So, and President Trump was asked in a photo op with the leader of the EU today, and he was asked, why hasn't Yeltsin, why hasn't Putin yet accepted your invitation? He didn't answer, but then a short time later they came out with this statement blaming the Mueller investigation.
I know they circle the wagons around their boss, but is it common for people outside, say, Sarah Sanders or Sean Spicer or Donald Trump, to call the Mueller investigation the witch hunt?
It seems very unusual. And that's why I included in the story that 30 people have been indicted and several aides have pleaded guilty to it. I haven't heard...
Another witch.
Well, I haven't heard a... Right, like sort of a, I don't know how would you term them, a senior staffer other than Sanders used that term.
And now here's Michael Bolton doing it, and John Bolton, I might add.
Michael's much more eloquent when he sings
if
it, though.
Michael had done
I
it,
almost
I'd
believe
say fine.
It. Yeah, I believe it when he sings it. But so, we'll see. There's going to be some reporting on this, because it's almost like, you know, a Peter Brady party. Maybe the invitation wasn't going to be followed up on anyway. I don't know.
Speaking of senior staff members for the President of the United States, Sean Spicer was his first spokesperson. He has a book out. He was on with Steve Cochran earlier today. Steve and Justin were peppering with some questions. It was a fun and very agreeable interview. Part of it went like this.
I'm not looking for any sympathy, but I don't know that people fully appreciate, you know, what kind of a toll it takes on you. And I was with a former kind of counterpart of mine from the other side of the aisle the other night, and she said to me, you know, I don't think people fully appreciate what it takes to stand up there. And neither of us were looking for sympathy. But, you know, I tell a story in the book. One day I come home and my house is up for sale on Zillow. You know, and no one, you can't get out there and complain about it. This is the job you signed up for. But, you know, someone had gone out and found a way to post my house up for sale.
Well, there's no way you could have known you were getting into that.
There's an element that you don't fully understand will occur in terms of the emotional impact and intensity that takes place.
What was the best and the worst day at work? What was your favorite day?
When the New England Patriots came to the White House, but not so much just because it was the Patriots, who I'm a lifelong fan of, but more so because I got to share that day with a bunch of my family. And my greatest days and memories in the White House were when I got to take this experience that I was so privileged to have. I grew up in Rhode Island. I was in a non-political family, and the idea that I was staying at this podium, I loved when I got to share part of the White House with complete strangers, friends, and family, and bring them in and say, you know, and know that I was creating a memory for them as it had been for me, you know, when we had visited Washington as a kid. I mean, granted, we only stood outside the White House, but those are those kind of moments that you remember sure. for the rest of your life. And so I always loved being able to share it.
What was the toughest day?
Well, I'm not sure if you saw it, but the first day was probably not my finest.
Well, yeah, we played the clip, but I mean, honestly,
oh, thank you.
That's been hit a million times. Where were you when you first saw the Melissa McCarthy bit?
In my kitchen. I write very extensively about this because obviously there's a ton of interest, but we had left for church that morning, and my wife had said, hey, there was this thing on Saturday Live, and we were trying to get the kids ready to go, and I said, all right, we'll watch it and get back. And I'm sitting in church, and it just, like, you can hear the phone vibrating, telling me there's another text or a tweet. And I'm like, I walk out of church, and I'm like, we got to go straight home. And I pull up the DVR, you know, go to the DVR, pull down the segment. I'm like, oh my goodness.
It's no secret how I feel about the president here, but I feel you're in a very difficult situation, and more days than not, you handled it well, and you do a nice job of being self-deprecating and things in this book. But what's your state of optimism about the country now?
I hope that we can back to, while disagreeing on policies and being partisan, I wish we could get back to a more civil and respectful discussion in this country.
Steve Cochran, heard weekday mornings on WGN Radio. Justin Kaufman's in that room these days, too. Steve's on the phone right now. Hi, Steve.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. Nice get. I wanted to interview Sean Spicer. You got him first.
I don't know how you feel about him. I think what threw a lot of people off about that interview this morning is how nice I was to him.
That's what I saw. You were a lot nicer than I thought you would be.
I think he was, here's my summation. I think he was in over his head. I don't think he was ready for that job. Not that anybody could be. And we had sort of a spirited disagreement on the show on what the job is. And my take is, the job is not to tell the truth. The job is to tell the administration's story of the day.
That was the first question you asked him about. You said, what's the job, to tell the truth or the truth as the president sees it? And he said, well, if it's an opinion thing, I need to express his opinion. But I don't think
apparently the president has a lot of opinions. Because, as you know, the lies come every single day. So I guess the question then becomes, how long can you stomach it, or how long do you last? And
but I think the odd question, but it isn't the, you started with that question, and that's the thing that I thought, boy, maybe I will talk to Sean about this, but maybe I shouldn't. But Bertrand and I have been kicking this around forever. Is it the obligation of Sarah Sanders or Sean Spicer to express the views, even if you know them to be underpinned by things that aren't true? Is it your job to express the thought of the president, lies and all, or should you not do that? Should you walk away from a job that's going to ask you to lie to the people? What's the obligation of a White House spokesperson?
Well, I think every White House spokesperson has had to answer that question, and I don't know any that have gone against the president that they served and kept the job, depending on how many times they went against said person.
My answer has been that your job is to express the views of the president,
right?
which you know, then means you're going to go to hell, but that's because that is the president. You are his spokes voice, for the same reason that maybe you should not ask the interpreters, what did Putin and Trump say? It's because you're representing them on a intimate, you know, very personal level. It's as if it's that person. So when Sarah Sanders says something that's crap, I think that's her job. If she said, Well, the president said this, but we all know that's not true, that's not her doing her job. She's not the decider. The president is. She needs to communicate his truth, lies and all. We don't like her for it. I'm not sure how you sleep at night, but I think that's the job. Do you agree with me on that?
I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. And I think that's what Spicer was in the middle of. His book has been savaged. He's been savaged. And by the way, he's not a scot-free. He deserves some of that. But I think the anger towards him and the anger towards Sarah Sanders is a lot of the hatred towards Donald Trump. I want Trump gone tomorrow, but I don't hold anybody else in the administration responsible for what he does from the moment he gets up to the moment he goes to bed. My opinion is just that he's a terrible person and not ready for the job and never has been. I can't imagine being in Sarah Sanders' shoes or Sean Spicer's shoes. And as you said, I don't know how you live with yourself. But again, the choices that I would have made, what's Sarah Sanders, 37, 38?
Yeah.
The choices I would have made at 37 or 38 may be different than I'm making 57. But you do have to live with yourself. And
but if that's the word.
Spicer was never up to the job. He really was. I mean, you remember the mistakes he made about the Holocaust and factual errors he made all the time.
Right, that they didn't poison. They didn't use poison gas on the Holocaust people. Like, that's kind of what they did.
He used the term the Holocaust Center, which had to be a really terrible place to go. But I think he was entertaining and aggravating and just part of that circus for the first 6 months. The problem he's struggling with now is the reviews have been hideous for the book. The book's not selling. And I think he's having trouble finding work. He certainly hasn't cashed in on this. And he's still sort of trying to ride the fence. He says a lot of really swell things and a lot of weird things, frankly, about the president in the book. But beating up on him, I don't think is entertaining for the audience necessarily, and I don't think he deserves it.
Yeah, I'm just going to live with that thought for a second here. I don't know what the obligation is. I mean, there he is. There is Sean Spicer, the guy that lied to us the first day. So maybe he does deserve to have water thrown on him at a restaurant or somebody like you yell at him on behalf of the people who had to put up with that crap. I don't know. That's why I'm almost glad I didn't get the interview, because I don't think I would have handled it well. And whatever I decided, I think I would have wished I'd done it differently.
Can I say one thing about the book?
I don't think you and I get to have it both ways, right? Because you and I agree that the job is to tell the story of the president they're serving. So if that's the job, what right do we have to rip them for doing the job?
What did you say, Steve?
Well, aside from all of that, there's some just really weird factual errors in this book, according to some reviews. They refer to Michael Steele as the person behind the dossier, and Michael Steele was the former Republican National Party chairman. They meant Christopher Steele. They referred to Obama's taking questions as president in 1999. Of course, he wasn't president then. So it just seems like the whole thing was badly edited or thrown together very quickly. I don't know how you can make those sorts of mistakes in a major publication.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, the publisher, I don't know who the publisher is, but there's a great conspiracy theory, as there is every day on the internet. And the conspiracy theory is that the editor was in the tank and didn't make the changes because wanted the book to be torn apart. Appropriately.
Well, that's crazy. The publisher wants to sell the book. Why would they?
But you know,
I'm saying the editor, specifically the editor that was assigned to it. And obviously, in the food chain, there's several people. Somebody should have picked that up.
I like the question, best day, worst day. And what was it like when you first saw it?
Yeah, you know what I thought he was going to say? The first day for both. Because I really thought the first day for both would be his answer, because the first day was he was excited about the job, and it was from the moment they said start your engines, I've got a lie for this guy. So I really thought that was his worst day. But the other thing that didn't come up in the interview, and we ran out of time, is I don't know if you remember this, when Trump took his family and others to meet the Pope, and he got that glorious picture of the Pope looking sadder than he's ever been in his life in the group shot with the Trump family, the Trumps are not practicing Catholics. John Spicer is a practicing Catholic who I believe goes to Mass every day.
Yeah.
And he was specifically left off that trip, almost like a bullying punishment by Trump.
That's
now, he did eventually meet the Pope, but I thought that would have been one of his answers, too.
All right, bud. So you're off for a couple of days, right?
I am off for a couple of days, but check that podcast out, John, because the full interview is there at WGNRadio.com.
And then Justin's going to ride the ship until Wednesday when you get back, huh?
Well, we'll see. That's the plan right now, but you never know. No, he won't be there. He'll be taking the show through. I'm back on Tuesday.
I think that's the question. It's like, oh, Justin will be there. The question is Cochran coming back? That's the question.
Tuesday morning, buddy.
I'd like to see you as the spokesperson for the White House.
Oh, I'd have a good time, wouldn't I? I would love to be Trump's spokesperson.
You would be spokesperson for hello. And then you would be.
I would be fired. They have the Secret Service throwing themselves on me in the first 30 seconds.
You can take them.
But yeah, check that interview out, and you can let me know what you think, too, because you can find me on Twitter at Cochran Show.
Okay, bud. See you later.
Thank you.
By the way, speaking of the president, here's an interesting tweet that somebody put up. I follow a lot of folks on Twitter, and this one goes like this. Okay, here's the tweet. It's from Tony Poznanski. He tweeted, Donald Trump's military parade is going to cost taxpayers $12 million. For $12 million, we could get 10,000 homeless veterans each an apartment at $1,000 a month for a year to help them get on their feet. That's how I'd like to spend my money. I also traded tweets today with Patty Blagojevich, the former first lady for the state of Illinois. She's going to be on Fox News again. If you want to talk to the president, you got to get on Fox News, and she's trying to get Donald Trump's attention to release her husband.
Did you see the Rick Pearson piece about what she wrote in the Washington Examiner?
No, I missed that.
The quote, I think, in that she wrote, I'll see if I can find it, what had to do with the fact that, let me just find
I did see that he had tweeted about it. I didn't know what
she writes, quote, little did we know how truly corrupt the Obama-era Justice Department and FBI really were, referring to her husband's prosecution.
Yeah.
But of course, her husband was investigated by the Bush administration and was arrested before Barack Obama became president.
Well, that's just splitting hairs.
Well, you know, she's just playing to her audience.
Totally. I mean,
well, that's the point of it. Yeah. Exactly.
Anything bad about Barack Obama is music to Donald Trump's ears. So that's the way she's playing it. And a few of you tweeted back to me saying, well, John, she doesn't need to come on your show. She wants to talk to the president. But I tweeted at her. I said, listen, if you want to get a groundswell of support, this is why she went on one of the other stations in town. Talk to Chicago. Talk to Illinois on one of these local radio shows. Like mine. We've been going back and forth. She's a little mad at us, so she doesn't want to come on. Actually, she's mad at somebody that doesn't even work here but has appeared here, so she doesn't want to come on. And I've been advising her, don't cut off your nose to spite your face. Let's have a civil conversation about what happened and should your husband get out early. So far, she's taking a pass. So the other day, Bill and Wendy were talking to somebody who, an attorney, who was talking about, is it legal or illegal to tape a conversation with somebody they don't know? I'm having a conversation with you. I didn't tell you that I was recording the conversation. Is that legal or not? And while they answered a couple of the questions you and I have, they didn't get answers to all of them. Steve, I gave away earlier in the show a pair of tickets to see Thomas Jefferson at the College of DuPage. You can pay for them, and I think you'll be glad with that investment in your money and time. Michelle from Elmhurst won the tickets. Hey, Michelle, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, John?
Congratulations. I'm doing fine. I'm glad you're listening. I'm glad you won the tickets.
Oh, so am I. I'm really looking forward to it.
Have you been at one of the Jefferson shows before?
I have. I have. And I've also seen Teddy Roosevelt and also Meriwether Lewis. I really enjoy his performances.
That's funny because I was in Joliet last night with my mom and dad and some of their neighbors. We were all having a swell time. And my mom has seen them all. And then she goes, and we saw Meriwether Lewis. And then my mom pauses and she goes, I didn't like that one so much. I said, well, I'll be sure
and
tell
them. No, I can't say that.
I think they're all good. They're all done by the same guy who is a great historian and really one of America's foremost experts on Roosevelt and Jefferson. And if you know Jefferson, you know Lewis. So there's the link between all of those. But we got some good seats for you. Bring a friend. This is going to be different. This is going to be... I always say that, but they always are. Every show is different. You know what I mean?
Yes, they are. They're very thought-provoking.
They really are. And we get some laughs in, too, don't we, Michelle?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm glad you're coming. Say hi to us when we're up on stage and talk to Elif one more time. We'll make sure we get you your tickets, okay?
Oh, thank you so much, John.
You can go to WGNradio.com/events right now and be part of the show. I talk to him on stage. You get to ask questions, too. Bill and Wendy were talking the other day with Rich Lenkoff, who is the host of the Legal Face-Off podcast at WGNradio.com. And capital member of Bryce, Downey, and Lenkoff, the law firm in town. And they were asking him about if the president says that it is maybe illegal for Michael Cohen to tape his conversations, is that correct? Now, I had read that in the state of New York, you don't have to tell somebody if you're taping them. And I think, Rich, you'll back me up on that, right? In this case, in New York, Michael Cohen had no obligation to tell the president he was taping him, if, in fact, he was his attorney, right?
Correct. You're absolutely true. That's absolutely true. In New York, unlike Illinois, only one party has to consent to the conversation being recorded for that recording to be legal. Illinois, on the other hand, requires both parties to a private conversation to consent. So what Michael Cohen did in taping his client, and whether he was in fact his client is a whole separate discussion, but what he did in recording the conversation with Trump was legal, probably not ethical, but definitely legal.
In Illinois, I want to talk about that. That's why I asked you to come back on. And I know you and Bill and Wendy had a very good conversation, but there was just a couple things that I wanted to ask particularly about this. In Illinois, both parties have to know in a private conversation. And it doesn't matter if either of you are attorneys, if it's just two citizens talking and one of them wants to record the conversation, if they have to tell the other person they're recording it.
That's true. It doesn't matter. Certain privileges apply to relationships like attorney and client, but that doesn't mean that any regular people having a conversation, can record it unless both parties agree. Now, you know, remember that it's a private conversation, which means you can go out and tape a confrontation between the police and a citizen. That's why all cell phone videos are legal. And why is that? Because those are public conversations. Those are public engagements where there's no expectation of privacy.
So my spouse and I are not getting along. We may be getting a divorce, and she or he is always saying these terrible things about what they're going to do to me or the kids. And so I'm going to privately record that so that my attorney will know, and he'll know that I know what that other person is saying. That seems to me to be prudent. That's not legal?
Not in Illinois. Not since in 2014, Governor Quinn at the time signed the Illinois Eavesdropping Act. If you recall, this was in the wake of a couple of high-profile cases, including some cases involving people taping police encounters. Before this statute came into place, you know, Illinois was really sort of the Wild West when it came to these issues. But in 2014, the Illinois Eavesdropping Act was signed into law. And to answer your question, it is illegal for a party to tape the conversation between them and the other party, regardless of the circumstances, unless both parties agree.
Well, even if that conversation is on the sidewalk?
Well, that's a great question. That's where the question of whether it's public or private comes in, right? So the sidewalk is one of those gray areas. And most, you know, most people who have tested this law in court have, you know, the question usually comes down to the court, usually comes down deciding whether the conversation is private. Because the other elements of the statute are pretty clear. It prohibits the use of any eavesdropping device in a surreptitious manner. Those two elements are pretty clear. Eavesdropping device is something that you use to record something, like an iPhone or like a phone. Surreptitious manner is pretty clear. You know, that means it was done with deception or secrecy. The key question in these cases is whether it was private. Now, if you're talking to someone, you know, in the privacy of an office or to your attorney or to your doctor, it's pretty clear that that was meant to be private. If you're talking to someone on the sidewalk to answer your question, or, you know, even at the water cooler at your firm or your office, is that a private conversation? Probably not. And the definition, according to the Act, is whether a reasonable person would have the expectation that that conversation would be private.
It's funny how
many
people...
Again, that's a gray area. You know, you often see this reasonable, you know, reasonable person standard applied in a lot of different areas of the law.
It's just funny how public people are, though, with their private conversations. I was walking down the sidewalk along Michigan Avenue today, and there is a woman who she was upset with her boyfriend, and she was talking to him with a phone that is in her pocket. And then the microphone is attached to her earbuds, and so she doesn't have to do anything but walk and talk. And everybody around her knew what the issues were and how they were and were not getting along. You could not avoid it if you were with her. But I don't want to dwell on that, because I want you to answer as succinctly as you can some more specifics. So I'm negotiating a raise with my boss, and he's been promising a raise or some perk, and I'm not getting it. I'm going to go in there and record the next time we have a conversation and he promises it. And then when it doesn't happen, I'll be able to prove that he promised that. Now, if I say, hey, I'm going to record this, well, then he's not going to say the things that, in fact, he's been saying all along. So I'm going to record it privately. I can't do that, correct?
You can do it, but you're committing a class 3 felony
in
our state.
Fine. And then what about this? I'm going to go ahead and do that. But at least I'll know. I mean, I will have that proof. Is that the breaking of the law, or the use of that, the breaking of the law?
Well, it's the use of it. I mean, you know, if you do it and no one knows about it and you never use it, I mean, it's like, you know, a tree falling in the forest. I mean, if you don't use it, then technically you've committed a crime, but it's the using it that really gets you in trouble. So if you record it, never use it, no one knows about it, as a practical matter, you know,
the instances, I'm not mad at you, but I'm just kind of incredulous.
Sure.
Where that would benefit the person secretly recording it. An abusive relationship where the guy is verbally or mentally abusing somebody or is threatening to once again physically abuse that person, and you can't get the cops or some advocate to believe you. I've got it on tape now, but no, I can't do that.
Well, no, again, you can't do that, that's true. And, you know, to answer your earlier question, the Act says you can't capture it. So the capturing it is the illegal part. So, you know, even if you don't use it, the fact that you've captured it, meaning you've recorded it, that violates the law. Again, if it's a private conversation and you haven't received consent.
And so then I go to my attorney or to a judge or a jury or somebody and say, well, all right, I know I broke the law. But listen to this damn thing. He promised me a raise, or he verbally abused me and my children, or something. That's not that doesn't exist in a court, right? That would never be submissible. You could not use that in any productive way, is what you're telling me.
Correct. I mean,
I'm going to change that law. That has got to go.
Well, using it, you know, again, you're talking about two very dramatically different things. Using it because you wanted a raise and your boss says no. You know, I'm sure that's not a huge, you know, in
no, he's always saying yes. He's always saying yes in these meetings. And then when I finally press him on it, he goes, no, I didn't say that. I go, yes, you did. You've been saying yes all year long. I've got these tapes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, the law is pretty straightforward that you cannot do that without the consent of your boss if it's a private conversation. And if you do, you've committed a class 3 felony. If you do it twice, you know, obviously the severity of the punishment is escalated.
All right. Another scenario. Sure. I'm just going to go ahead and tape this conversation we're having. And I know it's illegal, but afterwards I'm going to come up and tell you, no, I've got you, buddy. I've got you. Listen to this. And I'll play the tape back. And then, and I'll just say, just so you know, I've got this on you. Now, if that person is smart, they're saying, fine, but you might as well not, because, well, you might be able to embarrass me with that or blackmail me with that. It's not legally supported. You can't cash in on that. I guess you could cash in on that. Listen to my mind work here. If I blackmailed you with it, because even though I might be admitting to have committed a crime, the revelation might be so embarrassing to you that you'd still pay me for the tape. Or
a couple things. I mean, if I was your attorney, I would warn you about civil liability for doing that also, in addition to criminal liability.
Yeah.
You know, I would sue you privately for a variety of things, including defamation, including, there's lots of things you could sue someone for under those circumstances. But, yeah, I mean, I suppose you could threaten that, but to your earlier point, if I was the victim, so to speak, and I was aware of this law, I would say go ahead, but you're running the risk of committing a felony.
I'll see you in court. Okay, listen
exactly.
To this. All right, so here's a texter. Lots of texts, lots of calls. This one says, hey, John, I'm a private investigator, and I have a body camera right on my shirt, invisible at all times. If I'm serving legal papers, that camera is on, and people can see it. Is that legal? I wonder if the very fact that I'm wearing that device, he's wondering, is sufficient notice.
Well, I mean, it depends on whether, wearing... I haven't seen a case involving a body camera serving a paper. That's a very specific circumstance, right? But, again, the key in the law and the key in the way the cases or the law has been interpreted by the cases is whether that conversation is public or private. In that circumstance, I think that if you're out in public and you're serving the paperwork or the subpoena or whatever, there probably wouldn't be an expectation of privacy in that circumstance. And again, that's not really a conversation. I mean, it's legal to serve someone with paperwork and record it. That's not really recording a conversation.
So I do have a question. So if you're rolling already and you tell someone, just so you know, I'm recording, and then they continue to talk, at any point when they say, no, I don't want this recorded, what they say past that is not legal?
Yeah, I mean, they don't have to affirmatively tell you, if you simply tell them I'm recording and they don't answer, I think they've got a pretty good case, as would
right.
The state's attorney.
I think you're
that
right.
That they have not given consent. The act is fairly clear in stating that they have to give consent. So it's not enough that you simply say I'm recording and, their absence of agreement is enough. They have to affirmatively agree in order for that recording to be legal.
So it's not enough just to give them a warning, like, hey, anything you say now is recorded.
I think I know the answer to
this.
Yeah,
because then you would get into the circumstance of, well, did you really say it loud enough? Did they understand? The framers of this particular act didn't want to get into that. So, and remember, Illinois is in the minority. I mean, most states allow one-party consent. So
I think that would be the way it should be. But I'll give you an example, Violette. I think I know this much about this because it involves radio stations. We cannot call you live on the air and say, hey, Violette, is it your birthday? You're live on WGN Radio. That alone breaks the law. We have to call you off the air and say, is it okay for us to put you on the air? Which kills the fun of the surprise phone calls that wacky DJs used to do. Wally Phillips, famously at this radio station, would wake people up. And one time... Now, this may be apocryphal, but this is the way I believe the story is told. He calls somebody, and the woman answers the phone. He was calling for the guy. The woman who answered the phone wasn't his wife.
Ouch.
So, and the guy's like, hey, what I do in my private life is my business. You have no right to broadcast it. They didn't know, and I don't think the law protected the guy then, but it does now. You have to get their permission beforehand. My estimated probability of accuracy of that? 73%. I didn't realize I was going to have so many questions or be so angry about this. Rich, I really appreciate you coming on with us this afternoon.
Thanks, John, for having me. I appreciate being on.
Rich Linkoff is the host of Legal Face-Off on WGNRadio.com. You just recorded a podcast, in fact, this week with Alan Dershowitz, right?
We did. Yesterday, we were able to pry Professor Dershowitz off lots of other stations he's on all the time. He has a new book called The Case Against Impeaching Trump that we talked about, as well as the Mueller situation, the Brett Kavanaugh nomination, and we also talked baseball, so it was a pretty interesting interview.
I'm sure it is. Rich Lenkoff, host of Legal Face-Off. You can get that at WGNRadio.com and listen to wherever you subscribe to find our podcast. Thanks for helping us out. Bill and Wendy had a great conversation with you the other day, too. I appreciate your time.
Thanks very much.
You betcha.
It's Anna today. Ro is in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, of all places.
The big fly-in thing?
I think that's exactly right. He'll be checking in on the program, though, so we'll hear from him and his observations. You know, he's a big aviation nut. He loves everything, all things aviation, and he's going to check in on the program coming up for us.
Does it seem like Ro has more fun than one person should be allowed to have?
He's like James Bond, too. Sometimes he's a little secretive with these missions he takes, and then we're like, well, what are you doing? What are you doing? And so we'll get to learn today what he's doing and his observations out there in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
I think he's mostly secretive because he doesn't want us to tag along.
You know, that might be it.
If he tells us, we might just show up.
Very limited exposure to us, I think. It's at work and then rare occasions when he invites us to be in a party on his deck. And
you
then
should do the thing where you give clues and then we play Where in the World is Rokon?
You know, we could have done that. We should do that the next time. Sometimes he doesn't tell us. That's the only problem with that. I was listening with great interest to your last guest, though, John, and it's fascinating stuff how restrictive the laws are here in Illinois.
When I get to be king, that's going to change. What are you going to do today?
We are going to speak with Lester Holt from the NBC Nightly News. He'll be weighing in on this ongoing hearing right now with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. No major fireworks yet, but they're certainly grilling him about just what happened during that Putin-Trump behind closed doors meeting. And he seems to be allaying a lot of fears so far that, that it was communicated to Putin, that they do accept our intelligence community's conclusion and that he should not be meddling and it won't be tolerated and that kind of stuff. But we're going to be keeping an eye on that throughout the afternoon as that is just underway. We're also going to, Richard Roper will be here reviewing Mission Impossible, I think it's 6, maybe 10, I'm not sure. Yeah. It's the next installment.
It's a crooked number.
It's one of those. And we'll play News or Ruse today as well. Joe Donlan from the WGN-TV News will be joining us just shortly here. And, of course, Tom Skilling will be with us as well.
Sounds like a great lineup. Have a great show.
Thank you, John.